It's December, which means that we are coming to the end of 2022. Can you believe that? Seems like just the other day I started this series in January, and now we will be finishing it up. I will tell you, just like last month when I did the salt of the earth, today we're going to do the light of the world. But just like last month, there's more to say about this than just one sermon. So I will talk about this again probably next week or the week after that in some deeper ways. What we're going to do this morning is really more of a, I wouldn't say superficial, but a fundamental discussion about what is this idea that we're called the light of the world. I'll save my recap of all of this probably for a later lesson. I'm going to jump right into our text for today. Look down here in Matthew chapter 5, around verse 14. Jesus said, "You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor does anyone light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on the lampstand. And it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven." You know that song we just sang, "Let the Lower Lights Be Burning"? That song doesn't make a lot of sense to people if they've never lived near an ocean or the Great Lakes. I guess Minnesota people might know something about this if you've ever visited the lighthouses up north. But I actually grew up going out into the ocean in boats. My dad had these little, 16-foot, I think his boat now is 14-foot, aluminum boats, and he'd head out into the ocean and we'd go fish, and it was entirely dangerous, still is. But when I got a little bit older, I had a boat of my own that had a lot greater range. Like we could go, it had a 50-gallon tank of gas, and we could go, 20-something miles off the coast, and we could fish out deep, and we could do things like that. But there were a couple of times where the weather got bad, and I, with great sort of distress, tried to make my way back to the harbor of the place that I was supposed to be. And I can't tell you how grateful I am for things like lighthouses and foghorns and things that get your attention so that you can find your way safely back. Sometimes that was things we did in the middle of the night. Clay remembers being out in the middle of the night with me. And trying to find the right spot to come back in is a dangerous thing. But there's something very different about that song we just sang and this verse that we just read. In the song that we sang, "Brightly beams our Father's mercy from the lighthouse evermore, but to us he's given the keeping of the lighthouse." Remember that in the song? Something like that. Like we're the keepers of the lighthouse in the song. But look at verse 14 again. He doesn't say you're the keepers of the lighthouse. What does he say? "You are the light of the world." Can you feel the heaviness of that for just a minute? Like, feel the responsibility of that for just a minute. You are the light in this dark world. You. And I'll tell you what I want to say about this is, no, I'm not. Like, that can't be right. Like, I know my own darkness. I know my own failure. I know my own weakness. Like, you can't possibly put on me, God, that I'm supposed to light up a place that's as dark as this. That's not right. And let's get a little more clear about the verse. Just like last time, Jesus didn't say you should be the light of the world or you could possibly be the light of the world. Listen to his language. He said, "You are the light of the world." How can that be? What does that mean? How can you look, and I remember this when I was raising my kids. Both Kate and Shay would often talk about this when they were young. I remember it in their prayers. And they would say in their prayer, God, help me to be the light of the world. And I remember thinking something like, I wanted to tell them, you know, hey, you're too young for that. You know, you don't really understand what you're asking here. Like, to say to God, use me as the beacon in my school and in my workplace and in my neighborhood and in my nation. Like, go ahead, God, just like put me out there in the darkness and let everybody think that I'm the light to draw them to you. What? That's big. How can that be? Again, I'll ask the question, how can Jesus say something like, this is who you are? Well, let me say it a different way. Are we really the light of the world, or is there someone else that's the light of the world? In fact, you probably already know where I'm going to go with this, but I'm going to put up three statements from the Bible, three truths. Number one, isn't Jesus the light of the world? Isn't that like really what the Bible teaches? Jesus is the light of the world. How can I be called the light of the world if Jesus is going to say things like, I am the light of the world? But the second phrase we're going to explore, which is the link, is that Jesus being the light of the world gives light to everybody in the world. That's what the Bible teaches. And then the third thing we're going to talk about is this statement from Matthew 5:14. Therefore, we are the light of the world. So before we can talk about Matthew 5:14, we've got to talk about these other two truths, that Jesus is the light of the world and he gives his light to everybody. And then maybe if we get these first two things right, then we can be the light of the world. Here's the illustration. And I might come back to this at the end of the lesson. Physically speaking, physically, not spiritually, just in our physical universe, what is the light of the world? In the physical universe, the light of our planet is the moon, right? Not really. It's actually the sun that's the light of the world. But there's this lesser light that is very helpful, especially in the darkness, right? Like when the sun is up, there isn't darkness because the sun eliminates the darkness. Now, I want you to keep these images in your head because when we read in a minute Jesus talking about him being the light of the world, he'll say things like this. The light of the world is here, but a time is coming when the light will be gone and then it's going to be darkness again because he's the sun, essentially. But you see, when the darkness finally does come at night in our world, there still is light, isn't there? But it isn't the source of the light, it's a reflection of the light. In fact, if the moon ever goes out one night, like you're looking up at the full moon and it's shining, and all of a sudden, like the light switch goes out, we're in a heap of trouble. Because tomorrow's not coming. That means the sun went out, right? So let me go back to the illustration. Looking at a bunch of people like us and God saying something like, you're the light of the world, is kind of like saying to the moon, you're the light of the universe. And the moon would shake its head and say, no, not really. And God would say, yes, but you got to get some things right first. What's the real source of the light? So let's look at this first idea that Jesus is the light of the world. Go to John 8 in your Bible. John 8. I'm putting up three passages in the Gospel of John that we're going to look at. For those of you taking notes, chapter 9, verse 5 is the correct reference. I have a typo up there. It's not 9:15, it's 9:5. I'll say that again when we get there. But let's look here in John 8, verse 12. Then Jesus again spoke to them, saying, I am the light of the world. He who follows me will not walk in the darkness, but will have the light of life. Folks, that's such a tremendous statement. And we read this in the scripture reading, and we put the first 11 verses with it. And I think that's a really good thing to think about. You know, it was right after they tried to trick Jesus with this woman caught in adultery that Jesus makes this statement, "I'm the light of the world." Because what happened in that scenario with that woman was shady, to say the least. Like, the fact that they bring only the woman caught in the act, if they caught her in the act, isn't there a man involved? Where's the man in the story? You can't catch somebody in the act without the other party, but the Pharisees only bring the woman. I think what you have here is, you know, you can smell a rat. This is a setup. This poor woman, whoever she is, has been set up by these guys to try to trick Jesus. And what Jesus does in this scenario, by being quiet, not answering their question, stooping down and writing in the ground, and eventually getting up and saying something like this, "Hey, whoever's without guilt in this scenario, you go ahead and throw the stone." And all the older ones made their way out first because they knew what they'd done. You know what Jesus did that day? He exposed all of their darkness, all of their shadiness. They weren't going to get away with anything. And folks, we're not going to get away with anything from God. He sees it all. So at the end of that little scene, Jesus says, "I'm the light of the world. Oh, and by the way, if you want to follow me, come on and follow me, and I'll light you up and give you the light of life." Now, by the way, time out. That's really good news for us personally, isn't it? That if we come to the Lord, He helps us see more clearly ourselves and what's right and what's good, and we carry around light in our life that gives us life. That's the promise. Of course, like Jesus would say back in Matthew 5, if we have that light only for ourselves and we put it under a bushel, under a basket, we've kind of forgotten what the point of giving us light was. So go to the second one. Go to chapter 9. And again, this is not verse 15, it's verse 5. But I'm going to start reading in verse 1. John 9, verse 1. "As Jesus passed by, he saw a man blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, 'Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he would be born blind?' Jesus answered, 'It was neither that this man sinned nor his parents, but it was so that the works of God might be displayed in him.'" We must work the works of him who sent me as long as it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world. And then Jesus demonstrates that great statement by healing the blind man. The blind man who only saw darkness goes out and is healed and can see what's true. But this is an interesting phrase that Jesus uses, right? Hey, we got to work while it's day. He was doing miracles in that time that eventually those kind of miracles from men wouldn't happen anymore. Those kind of things happened when it was full day and the sun was out. And the night was coming when there wouldn't be the same kind of work that could be done when it comes to things like opening the eyes of the blind or opening the ears of the deaf like Jesus did. But there's a hint given here. When Jesus finally was gone, reigning from heaven, and darkness was the way the world looked, was there still going to be light here to help in the darkness? All right, one more passage. Chapter 12. John chapter 12 is a great text. I don't have time to do all of it. Up in verse 20 of John 12, there were some Greeks who were coming to worship in Jerusalem, and they came up to Philip, who was from Bethsaida of Galilee, and began to ask him, saying, "Sir, we wish to see Jesus." Philip came and told Andrew. Andrew and Philip came and told Jesus. And Jesus answered them and said, stop there for a minute. I want you to imagine this. There were some Greeks who come to Jerusalem. They've heard about Jesus. They find Philip, and they're like, hey, we'd like to see Jesus. Sir, we would see Jesus. I think I've told you this before. There's a pulpit, though, in California, and on the pulpit, right above where the preacher puts his stuff, that's the quote on the pulpit. It just says, sir, we would see Jesus, to remind the preacher that you all should see Jesus, but it's from here. I've always liked that. But these guys are just saying, we'd like to meet the one that we've heard about. Philip goes and tells Andrew. Andrew and Philip come and tell Jesus. And Jesus, to my surprise, doesn't say in verse 23, oh, where's the Greeks? Let's go meet them. Jesus starts talking about his death. The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Truly I say to you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. Why would he say this when people were trying to see him? Probably because he understood that if anybody was ever going to see him clearly, they would have to understand what it meant that he died. You see, him all by himself was just a seed. And a seed by itself, if it remains that way, it's alone. But if it dies and is buried and you put it in the ground, it bears much fruit. Or in other words, what Jesus was saying is, you want to really see me? Wait until I die, and you'll see the fruit that comes from that. And that's going to be not just me, but a whole bunch of my offspring. Well, who are they going to be? Go down to verse 35. Jesus said to them, for a little while longer, the light is among you. Walk while you have the light, so that darkness will not overtake you. He who walks in the darkness does not know where he goes. While you have the light, believe in the light, so that you may become sons of light. Did you catch that? When Jesus has this conversation about himself, he says, look, if people want to see me, just wait. Watch what happens when I die, and I won't remain alone. I'll have children. And here Jesus ends this conversation by saying, I'm the light of the world, and the day, again, is going to come when there's going to be darkness, but if you'll believe in me, you'll become the sons of light. And while I'm somewhere else, you all will still be shining. So, Jesus is the light of the world, right? Let's talk about this idea that Jesus gives light to everyone. Go back to John chapter 1. John chapter 1. Let's read these incredible words starting in verse 1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him, and apart from him, nothing came into being that has come into being. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it. There came a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify about the light so that all might believe through him. He was not the light, but he came to testify about the light. There was the true light, which coming into the world enlightens every man. He was in the world, and the world was made through him, and the world did not know him. Stop there, if you would. John has this whole thing about how when the word that was with God and was God would come to be with us, come into the world, that he would have life with him. But the life is the light of men. Notice how that keeps being like put together. I am the light of the world. Whoever has the light has life. Here it's opposite. He came to bring life, and the life was light. John the Baptist, he prophesied about him, but he wasn't the light of the world. Jesus was the light of the world. Doesn't it feel awkward again in Matthew chapter 5, verse 14, when John the Baptist is not the light of the world, Jesus is the light of the world, that Jesus would say to us, "You're the light of the world"? That's weird. If John wasn't the light, the true light, then neither are we, right? Jesus is the light. But go back there to verse 9 and look at this profound phrase. There was the true light, which coming into the world gives light to everyone, your version might say. Is that right? Does the fact that Jesus has come into the world, that God became flesh and dwelt among us, taught and spoke some of the most beautiful teachings that were ever uttered on planet Earth, does he bring light to everyone? Does he? Or should this verse say he brings light to some people? Go to chapter 3. John chapter 3. You might remember this scene in John 3 where a man named Nicodemus comes to Jesus by cover of night and says to him there in verse 2, "Rabbi, we know that you've come from God as a teacher, for no one can do these signs that you do unless God is with him." And then Jesus goes on to start talking to him about how you must be born again or born from above. And if you're not born again, if you're not born from above, then you cannot enter the kingdom of God. And Nicodemus is confused. He says, "How can that be? I can't go back in my mother's womb. How can a man be born when he's old?" And Jesus continues to talk about this. Skip down there to about verse 16. Verse 16. "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but have eternal life. For God did not send the Son into the world to judge the world, but that the world might be saved through him. He who believes in him is not judged," "he who believes in him is not judged. He who does not believe has been judged already, because he's not believed in the name of the only begotten Son of God. This is the judgment, that light has come into the world, and men love darkness rather than light, for their deeds were evil. For everyone who does evil hates the light and does not come to the light for fear that his deeds will be exposed. But he who practices the truth comes to the light so that his deeds may be manifested as having been wrought in God." This is interesting to me. John 1, verse 9 says, Jesus gave light to everyone. But here in John 3, Jesus seems to indicate that even though light appears in everyone's life because of Jesus, some people don't want it. Men love darkness rather than light. So when they meet Jesus, see Jesus, hear the teaching of Jesus, you sit down and try to talk to them about Jesus, instead of that light drawing them closer, they turn and move away from it. But let's get this straight. Did Jesus bring light to every man? Did he? He did. He did. You see, the choice, though, as to whether or not we're going to come to the light so that our deeds can be exposed and then be given life and be the light of the world, that's our choice. But Jesus, the light of the world, has given the opportunity to everyone. Now we can finally talk about Matthew 5:14. Doesn't it make sense now a little bit more how Jesus could say to his disciples, "You're the light of the world"? Only if, and I'm going to put a couple of phrases up on this chart, only if you believe the first thing. You have to believe that Jesus is the light of the world. If you don't believe Jesus is the light of the world, if you think the next president is the light of the world, you can't be the light of the world. If you think you're in and of yourself, your ideas, your philosophies, the way you've got life figured out is the light of the world. You can't be the light of the world. If you think somebody else, some other philosopher, some other way of life, some other truth, some other TikTok video you saw that's going to unlock all the keys to your miserable life, if you think that's the light of the world, you'll never be the light of the world. We must believe that Jesus is the light of the world. Second thing, when he brings light to everyone, we have to embrace it. We have to be drawn to it. We have to accept it. We have to allow it to be the light of our life. And if we don't, we're never going to get to the third thing, which is, if we're going to be the light of the world, we've got to live it, right? That's what Jesus is saying in Matthew 5:14. He's not saying you, in and of yourself, intrinsically, because you exist, are the light of the world. What he's saying is, after the Beatitudes, if you understand what it means to be poor in spirit, if you understand that you need to mourn, if you will hunger and thirst for righteousness, if you will be meek, if you'll be merciful, if you'll be peacemakers, if you'll be pure in heart, if you won't let the persecution of men cause you to stop confessing my name, then you are the salt of the earth and you are the light of the world because you've believed in the light of the world and you've allowed him to give you life and bless you. That's what this whole series is about. You're blessed if you know him, aren't you? And now you're the light of the world. Go to Ephesians 5. And let's read the way that Paul wrote this. Verse 1 says, therefore, be imitators of God as beloved children. And walk in love, just as Christ also loved you, gave himself up for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God as a fragrant aroma. Now, notice this. We're not told to just be ourselves here. What are we told in verse 1? Imitate God. Look, you're not the light of the world. He is. And the only way you're ever going to really be children of light is to reflect the light of the one that you know. So imitate him. Be like him in all these ways. And don't be deceived. Look at verse 3. But immorality or impurity or greed must not even be named among you as is proper for saints. There must be no filthiness and silly talk or coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks. For this you know with certainty, that no immoral or impure person or covetous man who is an idolater has an inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. Let no one deceive you with empty words. For because of these things, the wrath of God comes upon the sons of disobedience. Therefore, do not be partakers with them. For you were formerly darkness. But now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of the light consists in all goodness and righteousness and truth, trying to learn what is pleasing to the Lord. Do not participate in the unfruitful deeds of darkness, but instead even expose them. For it is disgraceful even to speak of the things which are done by them in secret. But all things become visible when they are exposed by the light. For everything that becomes visible is light. For this reason it says, awake, sleeper, and arise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you. Therefore, be careful how you walk, not as unwise men, but as wise, making the most of your time, because the days are evil. Isn't that a great passage? When Christians are told, look, you need to know who you are. You are the children of God. You're the children of light. You used to be darkness. Now you're light in the Lord, not in and of yourselves, only in him. But don't be deceived. You can't continue to live like the darkness and participate in the unfruitful deeds of darkness and think that you're going to be the children of light. You're not. So be wise. The days are evil. It's dark around here. There's only one way to be the light of the world. Let me go back to my illustration. To tell the moon that it's the light of the world, the only way that makes sense is if the moon can face the sun, right? And here is perhaps how we're a lot like that. The moon's got all of its phases, you know? Like it's waxing or waning. Like the shadow of the world, and I know this is like the eclipse is the idea, and the shading of the moon is different. I'm not getting into all of that. But when the world gets between the sun and the moon, it's really hard to see the light, isn't it? Don't be deceived, Paul wrote. When the world gets between you and the Christ, when you start participating in the unfruitful deeds of darkness, when you begin to turn your back on the thing that gives you the light, you aren't going to be the light in the darkness that you ought to be. I'm not. So, I'm going to leave you with this. And I'm going to say more about this again in the next couple of weeks. Because I think actually everything Jesus says in this statement in Matthew 5 takes us back to tremendous images and prophecies about us being the light and a city set on a hill that cannot be hidden. All of the other things that he says that I haven't addressed yet. We're going to go back and dig those out of the Old Testament and make sense of them. But for today. If you believe that Jesus is the light of the world, and look, you may not believe that. You may not. You may think that all of the other smart people out there that you're going to school to learn from, all of the psychologists, all of the historians, all of the politicians, all of the men who have said, we've got answers for you in your life, you may think they're the light of the world, and you may continue to pursue them to your heart's content until you die. But if you believe that Jesus is actually the light of the world that brings life, and you're willing to embrace it, embrace him, let him light up your life and direct your steps. I appreciated what Adam said at the Lord's table today. Did you hear him say that? You start looking for answers in all the other places, you're making the cross void. You start thinking that all the other things are the answers to life and light, you're wrong. But if you embrace it, and if God gives you life, then listen to Jesus. It's heavy. You are the light of the world. You are. If you'd like to become that today, come to the one who can give you that. If you need our help in any other way, let us know while we stand and sing together.